Welcome to Shattering Myths. On this program, we're going to begin in the first hour talking about Yahweh's plan. It isn't the plan of salvation as Christians would hope to find. It is a plan of familiar relationship. And we're going to examine the doorway to his home. That doorway is presented to all of us and opened for us on Pesach Passover as we cross the threshold of matzah unyeasted bread so that we can enter his home on Bikurim and be adopted into his family. Good morning, Kirk. How are you?
Good morning. How are you? You sound like you got a little cold.
No, I'm actually feeling good. Scott, I think, is under the weather. I did spend my morning preparing, actually, for the second hour of the program, where we're going to have IQ Hour Suli, and we're going to be discussing the Obaminator's choice for Secretary of Homeland Security, which is my least favorite organization, cozying up to Muslims and saying that their Quran seems to him like an expression of American values and that it is in harmony with the statements of Martin Luther King.
That's a horrible thing to say, isn't it?
Woo!
I beg your pardon.
I know. It's so I have been, so if you sound a little bit distracted until just before the program, I was continuing to find Martin Luther King quotations. And, you know, what you find when you do that is that Martin Luther King's words, and I understand that he is a lightning bolt, and there's people who view him as a saint, and there's those who view him as an antagonist to the society that they prefer. When you actually look at what he said, just take away everything and just focus on what he said. Much of what he said is appropriate, accurate, reasonable. It's sort of like JFK. You know, JFK had lots of character issues. You know, and he had lots of nasty baggage. His father bootlegging. He had the promiscuity issues. He had this affinity for Roman Catholicism. Lots and lots of nasty baggage, along with the fact he probably won the first election because his father cut a deal with the mob in Illinois. And so you'd have to look and say, all right, he was the man who chose LBJ, and LBJ is the man most responsible for the modern adaptation of the Great Society, which is destroying America, bankrupting the country. But, you know, if you look at what he actually said, what he said was extraordinarily reasonable. Well, the same thing is true with Martin Luther King. Now, if you want to find someone whose character is unassailable and whose words are perfect and whose testimony is profound, there's really only one place to find that.
I know.
Yeah, it's in the Torah.
In the Torah.
Right, so what does the Torah say about the means of escape? First of all, is there a presentation of an escape presented in the Torah?
There is an absolute exit clause.
Yes.
Called Passover, called the path through Passover, Matzah, and Bikurim.
Right. And that clause, the Passover clause, if you will, was first portrayed in the midst of the most horrible circumstances possible within humanity. There is nothing worse than being a slave. And being a slave in an overtly religious culture where the leaders are thought to be and claim to be God, where they have an enormous military apparatus that controls the people and suppresses all rebellion, that their economy is based upon slave labor. And when you are in that kind of an environment and have been for centuries, as slaves. So maltreated that if you give birth to a boy, the son is killed. Whipped. Looked at as a lesser life form than the animals that would parade around the temples. You can't be in a worse scenario than that, right? Isn't that the kind of the lowest place someone can be in life?
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, it's amazing they killed the boys.
Yeah. Well, they did because they were afraid of rebellion. You know, they were treating the Hebrews so poorly, they were afraid of rebellion.
Mm-hmm.
And so they would not only take, I mean, talk about the level of
depravity.
Moral depravity. To take an infant, you know, with the first breath of life and murdering it. And doing so hundreds of times over, thousands of times. I mean, that level of depravity just exceeds my imagination. And then this idea that for your own pleasure, you would abuse other people. You would find abusing them pleasurable. And that you would think that it is appropriate to build temples to your gods by whipping people into submission. That your gods would somehow be honored by slave labor and the debasement of humans. It is astonishing, but really that is the nature of humanity. It's the history of humanity.
Today is what people, what's motivating people today to turn the whole world into their personal fiefdoms.
And so what God was creating was an exit plan, an escape plan from a very specific scenario. And that is political, religious, military, and economic slavery. People being compelled to go along to at their own debasement. And he was trying to liberate us from being slaves to human, religious, and political institutions. I don't think there's any other way to look at this and not have to toss out evidence and reason.
Mm-hmm. No, you're right there.
So he's not freeing us from anything other than religion, politics, economic schemes, militarism. He's freeing us from the institutions of man. Now, that makes his Torah liberating, doesn't it?
Yes, absolutely.
In fact, is there any other way to view his Torah? Since the centerpiece of the Torah is the covenant where he wants to adopt us as children, and that's not an enslaving relationship.
No.
Followed by the Exodus, which is the liberation of his children from human oppression, followed by the universal plan of liberation presented through the Moed Mikre.
Well, that's
how would you look at it? Is anything else other than a plan of liberation?
Well, I think if you look at those people throughout all of human history, there's no one who was more free than they were.
Correct.
And what other civilization was free?
And the first tablet that Yahweh etched in stone, did he say, "I am the Lord your God"?
No, I don't think he said, "I am the Lord," no.
No. He says, "I am Yahweh your God." And is there something that follows that?
Who brought you out of the land of Mizraim?
Yeah, absolutely. Now, why would it say that if Yahweh's intent, after he introduces himself, the first thing he says, "This is my name, this is my title, this is who I am, and this is what I have done." Why do you think that he would begin the 10 statements with a declaration, name, title, "This is what I have done," and he mentions only one thing? Does he mention, as he starts the 10 statements, that he, by the way, could have on his resume? Creator of the universe?
No.
Author of life?
No.
Does he mention any of the things that he has accomplished other than one?
No, that was the sole focus.
He didn't talk about the flood and Noah, did he? I'm the God who led Noah to build a mighty ark. Did he say that?
No, it didn't even come up in a conversation.
No, it didn't, did it? I am Yahweh, your God, who led you out of the crucible of Mitzrayim. And so, as God summarizes his Torah, provides us with insights that would summarize the covenant in the Torah in these 10 statements, he only mentions one thing that he has done. In fact, all the way through it, his only mention of one thing that he has done, and that's the liberation of his children from human oppression, particularly religious and political oppression.
Yeah, that's a very interesting take on that. I never thought of it quite that way.
That's
absolutely true.
It's one of those things where
totally focused.
You've read it many times. I've read it many times. But the bottom line here is, Yahweh was totally focused. He gave us one thing. I know he's etched these statements in stone. These statements are essential for us to know who Yahweh is. And how we should relate to him and to one another. And he only lists one thing that he has done, and that's the liberation of his children from human, religious, and political institutions.
Now, how are you going to deal with Paul saying it's not now?
Now, how do you deal? Yeah, in fact, I had a lunch yesterday sitting next to a very personable African-American lawyer. Mm-hmm. And, we just started chatting. He was at one table by himself, at another table by myself. We began to chat. And he had expressed his background. He went to law school at Pepperdine, which is a Christian college overlooking Malibu. We talked a bit about that.
Beautiful campus.
Yeah, and I don't know how it led to a discussion of Yahweh and his Torah. And ultimately to Paul being a false prophet and Christianity being a false religion. But it did. Yes, in this discussion with this man who claimed that he had studied logic in school. I asked him, and he said, yeah, I've studied logic in school. Then you went to a Christian school. Can you explain to me why Yosha said, and there is no Jesus, he about swallowed his tongue on that, and I explained that. That there's no oos ending in any Hebrew name, and he was Hebrew, and the J wasn't invented in the 17th century. So there was no Jesus, but there was a Yosha. And Yosha tells you who he is. He's Yahweh saving us, diminished manifestation of Yahweh. I said, now he said that I do not think that I've come to annul the Torah, and went on to explain that not only was he fulfilling it, but that not a single jot or tittle of the Torah would cease to be valid so long as the heavens and earth exist. And Paul said, I've come to that the Torah was only served a purpose up to the point of Yosha, and at that point it was swept away, annulled. How could Yahweh say that circumcision is the sign of the covenant, and Paul say that if you're circumcised, then you can't be saved? You know, why would Yahweh say that his covenant is there's only one covenant, and that there will never be a new covenant, and that his covenant is everlasting? And Paul say that the old covenant was about being enslaved. In fact, in Galatians, the crescendo of Galatians is where he says that the covenant in the Torah was of Hagar and thus led to slavery. And Yahweh right here is saying that he is the author of liberation and that he liberated his children from slavery. They say the opposites. So if they say the opposite, one of the two is lying. Who do you think is lying, Mr. Logical Attorney? After about 15 minutes of that, he got up and ran away. Wouldn't even shake my hand as he left.
Oh, that's sad.
Yeah. Yeah, and I said, you know, all of these statements that I'm making to you now are irrefutable. There's no answer for any of them. You're not going to go to a pastor and say, please explain to me that...
Rent is God. He said this. Yeah, you can't find it.
Yeah, or the conflict between them. In fact, we went through the Chabaok. He made a comment. He says, how is it possible that such a lie could become so popular? If you say Christianity is completely false and the Paul's a false prophet, how is it that the church was able to promote such a heinous lie? And, you know, we explained how it grew out of the culture of Greece and Rome and of Greek Gnosticism and their affinity for Dionysus and Rome's anti-Semitism and how Theodosius created it in that environment. And so it was a religion wholly disjointed from its root. And we then talked about how the Daniel prophecy specifically speaks of the beast that is Rome continuing to exist right through the last days. And there's only one living legacy of Rome. It's the Roman Catholic Church, the very foundation of the religion of Christianity. And so it is just simply true that Yahweh introduces himself as our Savior, and he is Savior not from, he doesn't say Savior in the sense of this eternal salvation, because eternal salvation is only for his covenant children. He is our Savior in the sense of he is the one who is prepared and able and has set a prior example of having specifically led us away from being enslaved to human institution. He saved us from our fellow man.
Well, and then he goes on to educate us so that we can make a choice.
Right. And that's what's interesting here. You know, Yahweh introduces himself in his 10 statements as the one who freed us from the crucibles of Egypt, which were human, religious, and political oppression. And then he goes on to educate us so that we can use our newfound freedom to make a decision as to whether or not we want to engage in his covenant. And so the first thing that he says is, having taken his children out of a land where there were many gods,
mm-hmm.
he says, you will not exist with any god apart from me. Only one. That means there can be no Trinity.
No.
You're not going to exist if you have a Trinity. It means that that Yahweh is beginning this process by saying, before we can even talk, before I can show you the way, before I can invite you into my family, the first thing you must leave is the family of man. You must disassociate yourself for these things. I'll help you with that disassociation. But that comes first. Otherwise, none of this will resonate, as was the case yesterday. Welcome back to Shattering This. You see, if we are logical, if our minds are open, if our eyes are open, if we're willing to consider the evidence that God has revealed, we're put in a tremendously empowered position. But if our minds are closed because of religious faith, then doesn't matter what he said. So if we're open to knowing him, if we enjoy discovery, if we enjoy learning, then we're going to question, why did Yahweh introduce himself by name, by title, and then describe one of the many, many, many things that he has done for humankind when he began his 10 statements? We're compelled to do that. If we don't do that, we're not thinking. We're not studying. We're simply reading, and it does you very little good to read if you don't pause and think. You know, I've been asked so many countless times, you know, why don't you just translate the Torah, prophets, and Psalms let it go at that. And I said, because I can't, because I won't, because what's the purpose? I mean, the whole purpose of Yahweh's testimony is to help us come to know and understand who he is and what he's offering. If we don't think about it, what's the fun in that?
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of like saying, all right, what I'm going to do is I'm going to learn my multiplication tables. I'm going to memorize them. Well, what's the fun in that? Why not understand the concept of multiplication? And so here's Yahweh introducing himself as our Savior, and you're right. Paul, the founder of the Christian religion, says that the Torah cannot save. Well, one of the two is lying. And it's interesting, of course, that Christianity has chosen to obfuscate, to completely disregard, in fact, to besmirch Yahweh's seven invitations to meet annually. They refer to Passover as a Jewish holiday, matzah as a Jewish holiday. They don't even mention Bikurim because they don't think enough people even know it exists.
And even if you did, why would that be something bad? That's just another knock on the Jews. I mean, come on.
Yeah, well, absolutely. You know, they don't just say that Passover and
some old holiday
and unleavened bread is what they would call it are Jewish holidays. They go on to besmirch the Jews. I mean, they promote to this day that the Jews killed God. That they are the Jesus killers. They killed their God. Man, those Jews have really got to be good if they're powerful enough to kill God. Now, by the way, using our illustration from yesterday and the day before, that would be like Mickey Mouse killing Disney. No. Methinks no.
No.
So here you have a... You know, this religion that is chosen to besmirch Yahweh's invitations. That then if you look at Bikurim, the one that they won't even mention in Christianity, they replaced it with the Babylonian festival of Ishtar, Easter. And there isn't anybody out there saying, wait a minute, here's God saying that his invitations to meet are essential, that if you don't attend them, that you cannot be part of his family, you cannot continue to exist, that you will be cut off, separated, if you don't meet with them on these days, and Christianity completely besmirching them and establishing pagan days in their stead. And you wonder, why is it that there's any informed and rational person who's a Christian? And ultimately, the answer is there are none. There are no informed and rational Christians. You can't be informed and rational and be a Christian.
Well, that was evident by you. Yeah, that was evident by your lunch. I mean, did he say anything or did he just get up and leave?
He just got up and left.
And did they drop dead or nothing?
No, you know, it was through the process, you know, I would bring up points in the conflict between Paul and Yahweh and the comments in and Chabaouk that Yahweh, when he called Shaul, because he knew that his name was Shaul. He says, you know, how can this man whose name was Shaul, you know, Saul, who was, you know, a rabbi, how could he have, be mistaken? And why did Jesus choose such a man? I said, well, first of all, Jesus didn't choose him.
He should have done it while he was in town.
Yeah, in fact, we went through and we said, Yosha said that if anybody claims to see me in the wilderness before the whole world sees me, he's a liar, do not follow him. And yet, isn't that exactly what Paul claimed? One of the two is lying. Yosha claimed that there would be a wolf in sheep's clothing. The Benjamite. Is the wolf. Paul was a Benjamite, that would be one who would pretend to be one of them who would lead them astray based on an attempt to annul the Torah.
Yeah.
It's exactly what Paul did. You know, Yosha wasn't choosing Paul. He was telling us to distrust him. He warned us about him. Who do you think the false apostle was in Ephesus? There's no one else that fits the bill other than Paul and his pal Timothy. mean, think it through.
Yeah.
There are no other options. That is the only option.
Yeah, the evidence is overwhelming.
Yeah, the evidence is overwhelming, but you've got to be able to process it. That's why Yahweh begins this. And it is essential to understand not only why Yahweh chose to only list his one accomplishment, the freedom from Egypt. You know, he has a couple other accomplishments that, you know, would fit much higher on that list. Creator of the universe and author of life. Yeah, I mean, I freedom from the Egyptians. But that's what he listed on the list. And he did so for two reasons. One is that he wants us to know that the enemy is human religious and political schemes.
Enforced by a military that's...
Right. And economics based on enslaving people.
You keep describing our country.
Yeah, I know. That is the enemy. And he wants us to know that's the enemy. And number two, he wants us, well, I guess there's three things here. He wants us to know that he is providing the means to liberate us from that. And I don't think there really is a way to be completely liberated from all aspects, political, religious, military/patriotic, and the economic schemes of any country in the world,
mm-hmm.
and be liberated from all of them apart from Yahweh's Torah perspective.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Torah's perspective that says, oh my, there's a much better alternative.
Mm-hmm.
He provides the motivation for dishing them all and the answers that build a solid foundation under the individual so that they are not tossed to and fro. Because, you know, if you disjoin yourself from everything, you would think, oh my God, you're just going to be floating in the ether.
Mm-hmm.
But yet, Yahweh's Torah provides such a solid footing, such a solid foundation, that is the only way you can disassociate from all of those things and yet still have sure footing.
Mm-hmm.
So the Torah is the only way out of those things. And he wants us to know that he is about liberation. Now, liberation is essential, Kirk, because he knew that religions would recast his Torah guidance as law and recast his encouragement to listen and to observe as obey. And so laws, which you have to obey, are constraining. And yet he talks about being the author of liberation. So he's telling you at the forefront of this that he's not trying to constrict us. He's trying to liberate us, which means that the Torah cannot be about laws to obey.
Well, you know, laws are about for people you don't trust.
Yeah.
You have no respect for. I mean, that's not what a father does. He teaches you things, and then he expects you to use your brain and do it. But you write a law because I don't want you to do, my gosh, I don't want you to do this.
Yeah, I want to restrict other people's. You write laws because you want to restrict other people's behavior so that they don't do something you don't want them to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that laws are written for one reason, to restrict behavior.
Sure.
And restriction is the opposite of freedom.
Freedom.
You know, it's amazing how people think that law and order is such a good thing. In fact, one of the Martin Luther King quotes was on, he went on and on about laws and how laws are important. And the fact is that if people would read the Torah and be liberated by Yahweh's plan and come to know him, you wouldn't have to have any laws. You know, laws are restrictive, and Yahweh is telling us here that he is liberating. And finally, Yahweh is telling us that unless you come to, A, know who he is, Yahweh, that he's unlike any other, you've got to start with a name. He starts with a name. I am, which is Hayah, of course.
And singular.
Yeah, and singular. Yahweh, your God, your Elohim. And, you know, even Elohim, in harmony with Roy's insights, you know, Roy was talking about the difference in capability, the difference in power as you move up in dimensions. A being in a four-dimensional construct is infinitely more capable and powerful than a being in a three-dimensional construct. So, that being the case, what does Elohim mean? From El and Eloah.
Well, that's light, isn't it?
It's related to light. But El and Eloah.
Well, it's the Aleph and the Lamb.
That's the picture.
So it's
of
the
it.
Authority and the power.
The meaning
the
is
direction.
Almighty.
Yeah.
Mighty One. He's saying, I have the power. I have the ability. And in case of the letters, I have the authority and the ability and the power to lead you to safety.
Right.
El. Welcome back to Shattering Mist. Until we are willing to leave the religious and political institutions of man, then the rest of Yahweh's words will not resonate. And that is why the statements that Yah etched in stone begin the way that they do. If we're still mired in religion, if it forms our perspective, then nothing Yahweh says will resonate with us. So it is essential that we pay attention to what he said, how he said it. And this is no exception. You can't enter the doorway of Yah's home if you're still religious, according to God.
No, it's very clear. With Abraham as well, you know, all of them.
Yeah. What was the first thing that Abraham was asked to do?
He said, walk away.
Walk away. Where was he?
He was in the counterpoint to Egypt in the same situation in Ur.
Yeah.
Or Babylon.
Yeah, Ur of the Chaldeans, which is Babylon. That's where he was, and the first thing Yahweh asked him to do was to walk away from his country.
You know, even if he got it, you still can't live amongst it because the influence is so great. The children are all corrupted. I mean, you know, they're gonna. You really have to protect the whole family.
And you know, in the case of Abraham, it was a walk away from too. In the case of the Exodus, was it a walk away from and to?
Well,
was there something that was a to destination in the case of Abraham and the case of the children of Israel, and was that to destination the same?
It was promised land.
Promised land. And by the way, promised land. So it'd be land, which is Eretz,
yeah.
Of that's promised. Do you know the Hebrew word for promise?
No, I don't.
Yeah, it's a word that we.
Wait a minute. Go ahead.
It's a word that we have covered so many times here recently. It's the same word as say, which
is a promise.
Amar. Well, Shabbat is a vow. Shabbat means to promise as a verb, but this is a being used as a an adjective to define the noun land. And as an adjective, we take a form of the verb amar, to speak, and it means promise. And so the promised land, when we refer to it as the promised land, it is the land of amar, which is Yahweh's answer, Yahweh's sayings, Yahweh's speech, Yahweh's promise. Yahweh's declaration. So the land is the land of what Yahweh says.
Now, is that so the land that Obama says that the Muslims have to have?
Yeah, that's the same land. Yeah, that's the same land that Yahweh wants to give to Allah. Yes, it is the land that
Kerry wants to give it to him too, right?
Yeah, that the Abominator wants to give to Allah. Yeah, to Allah. Yahweh said. Now, just think about the profound this is. because Yahweh is leading us away from, enabling us to walk away from human oppression through religion and politics and militarism to a place of his words, of his sayings, of his declaration, of the Eretz Amar, of his promise. So when you think of that Yahweh is taking us to a place of his sayings, of his words, of his Amar, then aren't we being taken to the place where the word of Yahweh is the centerpiece?
Mm-hmm.
And for those who gravitate to promised land and they think of Israel circa 1400 BCE,
mm-hmm.
you're shortchanging God. Now, is Israel circa 1400 BCE the land of Yah's word? Absolutely. It's where Yah revealed himself to us. Yes. Is that all it represents? No. The land of Yahweh's words, of his declaration, of his insights, of his promise, of his answer, is the realm that we are all going to when we walk through the doorway of Passover. That's where the doorway of Passover leads, is to the realm of Yahweh's word. The world realm he's created. It's the realm we're studying. It's the realm comprised by the jots and tittles that Kirk has illuminated for us. That means that eternity is going to be surrounded by the very sayings, the word of Yahweh.